This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel, and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchuk, we come to you every week to discuss the topics that doctors discuss between themselves on every topic in healthcare. We let you in on those private discussions so that you will be armed with the information that you need to fight for your healthcare freedom. This show is sponsored by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a non-for-profit, tax-deductible organization, which was founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in. And it offers solutions that are very different than what has been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you the kind of healthcare you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. This foundation is going around the country fighting for the healthcare freedom for all Americans and trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, which is very much in jeopardy right now. So please go to their website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org, and contribute generously to allow these people to carry on this fight on your behalf. You might not think that you need to get involved with this, but let me assure you that you do. And if you're not a patient yet, someday you will be one, and you'll want the doctor of your choice there to take care of you. Well, for the last couple of weeks, we've focused on Ebola, so let's get away from that this week. And even though things in the world are going crazy, and it seems like we're dealing with whack-a-mole all the time, something terrible comes up, and we address that, and other problems fall down into the mole hole. Healthcare has been one of those issues that has been around and persisted. And even though it's something that is no longer on the front page of the newspapers around the country, it is still a tremendously important issue, and it's affecting every single American. And I've had several shows where we've done monologues, but I really would like to get back to what I like to do best, which is to chat with a knowledgeable doctor about these issues. And so that's what we're going to do today. We've invited into the doctor's lounge a good friend of mine and a very knowledgeable physician in what's been going on in healthcare over the last 6 years. His name is Dr. Ori Hample. He is a urologist in Houston, Texas. He is the vice president. I'm not sure his position at this point, but he's an officer in the Docs for Patient Care Texas chapter. He's a frequent guest on talk radio in the Houston area, very much connected with the healthcare issues, and quite knowledgeable. And today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Obamacare, and specifically whether or not this is an election issue anymore. In today's Wall Street Journal, interestingly, and this show has been planned for several weeks, there's an opinion piece by Karl Rove that talks just about that. And he writes that Obamacare returns as an election albatross. So with that as a backdrop, I'd like to invite into the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio my good friend, Dr. Ori Hample. Good morning, Ori.
Good morning, Hal.
How are you been?
I've been great.
Well, that's great. You know, you and I speak a lot about the healthcare issues and correspond about all the problems. And there is there's two sides to this issue, and we're going to try not to make this into a partisan issue today, but I think that really there are those who believe that healthcare is decided and it's a done deal, and then there are those who think that this is far from over, and this and what we have right now in healthcare is dangerous and harmful to patients, to Americans, and needs to be fixed. So, Ori, do you think that that Obamacare is an election issue for this year, or are people over it?
No, people are not over it. And people are, every day, people are discovering more and more that Obamacare is either affecting them now or is planning to affect them in the very near future. And my patients are very worried. But, you know, Obamacare is just one piece of the puzzle of just overall government control over our healthcare decisions. And people are finding themselves being affected by other aspects of governmental health control. And every time something like that happens, they even think it's Obamacare just because they know Obamacare is so sweeping.
Well, you know, there has been a lot of opinion pieces in the last week that have appeared in the Wall Street Journal about healthcare, and it's about all the different facets of healthcare that are supposedly going right, but really are very wrong. You know, the proponents of Obamacare, who have claimed that the law is successful, have pointed out that now healthcare is more accessible to people and more affordable. Has this information been doctored?
Well, that information is just completely not true. I'll give you a perfect example. There's a mother here in the Houston area, very responsible mother. Her child did not have health insurance. So she made sure that her 16-year-old healthy child, perfectly healthy child, he's a star of the football team in the school, exercises regularly, maybe to extreme. She got her child in an Obamacare plan. She thought she got one of the better plans, or, you know, she was, of course, limited by what she could afford. So her child, as he was the star of the football game a week and a half ago, got hit quite a few times because he played both offense and defense, and he experienced blood in the urine. That scared her. That scared him. And they went to an emergency room. And that's when she realized that she had a $6,000 deductible and nothing was going to be paid toward her child's care and evaluation until $6,000 got extracted from her. And so most people do not have $6,000 lying around. So, of course, in the healthcare system, we have EMTALA, which is a law that prevents people from being turned away from the emergency room. That's why nobody can have emergency access, lack of emergency access. So he got blood tests and radiology tests and then was referred to me. So, you know, I saw the patient. I had to order additional testing. You know, again, the expenses incurred here, physician fees are a tiny fraction of the fees. It's really most of the healthcare expenses are once you start utilizing laboratory, radiology, and hospital and facility fees. And, you know, this is a woman, and the good news is that the child is fine. He doesn't need surgery. He's going to recover from his injury without any surgical intervention. The reality is, here she thought she was taking care of her child and being responsible, but the reality is she ended up losing $6,000 and feels like she was paying for the privilege of paying more.
Well, that, you know, that's a huge problem with what's happened in Obamacare. It's taking people off of the insurance that they were told that they could keep if they like it, and forcing them to get an insurance plan that's on the exchange or worse. Our friend and a good friend of our one of our board members in the foundation, Jeff Singer, who works with our buddy John Ammon in Phoenix, had a great opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal this week. And he, in that piece, described how Obamacare forces people off of private insurance and forces them into Medicaid, and it takes away their health care freedom. It doesn't enhance their health care freedom. And a study, he pointed out, from Boston University and Harvard Medical School reported that 80% of the people participating in Obamacare's Medicaid expansion have been shifted off their private insurance. That means that all of these Medicaid signups, they're not people who were without insurance or who were poor. These are people who had insurance, and they've just shifted them off of insurance that they liked and forced them into Medicaid. So this Medicaid expansion, which is one of the cornerstones of Obamacare, is this a bad idea?
Oh, it's not a bad idea. It's a horrible idea.
Why?
The problem with Medicaid is Medicaid gives you an insurance card saying, here, you are covered. The problem is that physicians under Medicaid actually lose money. When we see a Medicaid patient, even if we just see them in the office for a short period of time, we get paid $20 for the visit or less sometimes. And so what happens is we actually pay for the privilege of taking care of Medicaid patients because the amount that we get paid for Medicaid doesn't even cover our expenses. And if you're doing a surgery on somebody with Medicaid, you are definitely paying for the privilege because it's not meeting the reimbursement is not meeting your very basic expenses of just keeping the doors open, let alone paying your employees or bringing anything home to your own family. So physicians, as a general rule, we know in Texas, one-third of physicians don't see Medicaid at all, and an even larger number won't see new Medicaid patients or will only see them in an emergency setting. So you have insurance without access, insurance without health care. You have health insurance, but you can't actually get the care. And when you can, it's usually not going to be with the physician of your choice or necessarily with the best physician you would be able to see or should see.
And that's borne out by a recent Merritt Hawkins study, actually. They looked at doctors who were taking new Medicaid patients. And across the country, that number is down now to 45% of doctors across the country taking new Medicaid. And in some places, like in Texas, that number is even worse. In some major cities like Dallas and Minneapolis, the number is closer to about 25%. And so this...
Well, In our particular practice, we were seeing Medicaid patients because I was taught in medical school you need to take care of everybody, not just those with resources. That you know you need to take care of all people, because we went into medicine to take care of people, to heal people, regardless of who they were, where they came from, and whether or not they had money, especially when they were ill. The problem we were seeing was that not only were we not making any money, we were losing money, and it was preventing us from taking care of patients that would help us keep the doors open. So we did the math, and if we didn't stop seeing new Medicaid patients, we would stop seeing all patients.
Right. Well, we're one of the few practices here in Georgia that, as a specialist, that still sees Medicaid patients because we're the only ones who do what we do. We'll talk a little bit more. We're running into a hard break, Ori, so we'll tie up the Medicaid issue and then get into some of the other issues about Obamacare in the next segment. You're listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
This is Dr. George. Join me on Wednesday mornings from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock when we talk about more than medicine. It's now about staying healthy, but it's about the strategy to do so. Join me on Medicine on Call.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio. And you're listening to America's Web Radio.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Dr. Ori Hample, a urologist from Houston, Texas, and the vice president of our Docs for Patient Care Texas chapter. We've been talking about Obamacare as an election issue for 2014 elections. We were wrapping up a little discussion on Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. You can look at Medicaid two ways. The Medicaid expansion, which the government has called for, which is necessary for implementation of Obamacare. They have to be able to have more people under government-controlled health care in order to be able to make this work for them. Getting away from the financial part of Medicaid, there have been studies that have shown that the outcomes of patients on Medicaid are actually worse than those who have private insurance or no insurance at all, surprisingly. Want to comment on that?
Absolutely. The real surprising thing by reviewing those data is that the people who actually have no insurance actually have better health outcomes than the people who have Medicaid.
And that was a study that was done in Oregon.
Right. There are so many factors that go into that. You see, if you don't have a governmental insurance such as Medicaid, you have choice of what you want done when you want to do it. The other thing you do is you take ownership. You want to stay well because you don't want to spend the money to maintain the sickness or to fix the sickness. So what you do is you take extra good care of yourself. You watch what you eat. You listen to your doctors. And then the other thing you can do is you can actually use the free enterprise system and choose and shop and figure out from the Internet and so many other sources and word of mouth, who is the best doctor? Who's going to be the most efficient facility? Which is going to be the most efficient facility? Where can I get my health care for the best deal? Remember the case we talked about the 16-year-old child that got injured in this football game? I mean, even with insurance, they still had to spend $6,000. $6,000 will buy you a lot of health care.
It sure will.
On the cash market. It will get you surgeries done.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Well, it's what's two things about Medicaid. One is that the people who are on Medicaid can't get access because there aren't doctors taking care of them, so they wind up using expensive resources that are probably the least appropriate places for people to get just regular care, emergency rooms, and they don't get any kind of coordinated care. It's fragmented care, and that's why they do worse. And it was interesting because a UVA study pointed out that Medicaid patients undergoing major surgery were twice as likely to die in the hospital than those who had private insurance. And those without insurance at all were 25% less likely to have an in-hospital death than a Medicaid patient. So we're looking at people who are not practicing wellness who are sicker because they're not getting the kind of care that they need. And so I think that as an election issue and a PR issue, those who are advocating for Medicaid expansion are actually they are condemning people in this country. They're condemning patients to worse outcomes and worse health care.
Well, it's they're basically what they're doing is they're taking the segment of the population, and a lot of those people are people that are sick, that are disabled, that are unable to work. A lot of those people may have chronic diseases. These are the people who really need the care. They probably need the best access for care and the best physicians, but because government has proven that it can't run anything well or efficiently, it basically takes the people that need us the most and reduces their access to us the most. So we can't take care of the people that really need the care.
Right. Well, you know, let's change gears for a bit and talk about another issue that has been reported this week in the opinion pages of the newspapers on health care, and that's about the failing cost controls of Obamacare. So one of the hallmarks of Obamacare, the foundation for its success, relied on the concept of accountable care organizations, ACOs. Do you want to tell us a little bit about ACOs, Ori?
Well, what ACOs are groups that are put together, is an organization that's put together either by a hospital, a large physician group, an insurance company. It's basically a group of doctors. And this applies to Medicare patients mostly. And it basically allows the gathering of data and the control of the care in a top-down fashion to an isolated group. And what it does is it sort of compiles groups of patients into a very restricted group of physicians that can take care of them.
It's like a closed panel HMO.
That's correct.
Just like we saw a couple of decades ago. And so this is the business model that Health and Human Services introduced in 2011, and it got put into the Federal Registry as a federal regulation as the business model for healthcare to reduce healthcare spending. And according to the formulas that they put together, doctors or ACOs were either paid a bonus if they had saved money, shared savings, or they had decreased payments. They were penalized if they exceeded the budget that they had provided there. So the if you remember, there was a project, the Pioneer ACO project, and it started with 32 healthcare systems that were handpicked by Health and Human Services. We now have the two-year report on that experience, and of those 32 systems, 13 of them, or a third, dropped out because they spent more in the new system than in the old status quo, and only 13 qualified for a bonus in year one, and that dropped down to 11 in year two. So the money was saved overall, but less than one-half of 1%. Compared to ordinary fee-for-service Medicare or Medicaid. So the startup cost $64 million. It was wiped out by the bonus, so it was a wash. So the real question is this system, the ACO system, actually working to save money? And it appears that the answer is no.
Well, it's worse than that. You know, you're looking at the 35,000 foot picture as a healthcare system. But honestly, you know, what my patients care about is how is this affecting me? You know, it's great to hear about federal deficits, and the numbers now are so big that nobody can wrap their brains around them anyway. the real issue here, what does this mean to the individual patient? It means that these groups have an incentive to not spend money on the patient's health care, period. They know they're going to have to spend some money on preventative services, but it means that if they need something expensive, such as a hip replacement, they're going to send you to something cheaper, such as a limited amount of physical therapy. In other words, they're going to delay the patient's care, especially when it involves an expensive modality or an expensive evaluation. And sometimes patients need an expensive evaluation. So besides the fact that financially it doesn't work for the country and for most of these ACOs, the reality is it doesn't work ethically at the level of the doctor, and it doesn't work practically at the level of the patient. Because, again, it sends the patient into the same type of scenario that they are in Medicaid. They have a health insurance card. They have a health insurance program. But they really don't have access to choice or to the best services.
Right. And so these accountable care organizations, which were hand-picked by Health and Human Services, I think that this is really the telling point. These elite programs couldn't make this work. They could not save money. So what's going to happen to the small community hospitals around the country that make up the backbone of the healthcare system in this country? There's no possible way that they can succeed. So I think you've hit the nail on the head, and I'd like to talk more about that in the end with the remainder of this segment and into the next segment, which is if the ACOs can't make money by putting doctors together and doing things smarter and better, then the only way that they're going to be able to save money is by rationing and holding back and not delivering the care that people need. So I think that that's something that is happening on a local level, but it's also happening, it's going to happen on a national level, because once the federal government sees that the ACO model, which is part of the backbone of Obamacare, is just a terrible failure. Medicaid expansion is a terrible failure. Then the only way that the government can control healthcare costs is with using the 159 new agencies to restrict care. Is that correct?
Absolutely, because. You don't spend money when you don't care for the patient. We have an old joke: if you don't check a temperature, you'll never find a fever.
That's
then
right.
You'll never have to treat one. So the reality is that when push comes to shove, at the end, budgetary constraints are going to force rationing, because there is no free enterprise in our healthcare system today, wherever the government is involved. And so there's no shopping around for the best deal. There's no competition. There are set prices. And when the marketplace can't function within the set prices, the service is not provided.
So the way that the federal government will do this is with a heavy hand. And we haven't seen any of this yet. We're in 2014, and the worst parts of Obamacare have been postponed to take it out of play for the 2014 elections. And so we're getting to a hard break, but in the next segment, I'd like to talk about some of these heavy-handed boards that are going to impact every American because of the decisions they make, which will restrict the care that doctors can give. You're listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
This is Donna Fiducia, co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio.
This is Hal Schurz on America's Web Radio, and you're in the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Dr. Ori Hample. We've been talking about Obamacare as an election issue for 2014, and we're going to get to that later on in this segment specifically, but we're setting this up about the problems with Obamacare that if anybody really looks at them and dissects this apart, we're going to really be able to say that health care has to be an election year issue for this year. And we've talked about how with failures in the design of Obamacare, the Medicaid expansion is a failure. The model to save money, the accountable care organizations, is a failure. The only way that they're going to be able to save money is to ration care, and they've set that up with some very, very authoritative, fancy named boards that give this the appearance and the imprimatur of good medical decision-making, when in fact this is really heavy-handed, top-down government bureaucracy at play. And one of the 159 new boards that were set up, this was actually an advisory agency prior to Obamacare, but it's been memorialized as a board in Obamacare, and that's the United States Preventive Services Task Force, which came out with the recommendations about limitations in screening for breast cancer and also in limitations for screening for prostate cancer, which Dr. Hample will be able to opine about probably with as much authority as anyone. But this is going to expand. If you think that it's over with just breast cancer and prostate cancer, you haven't seen anything yet. It will go to colon cancer, it will go to other screening, and that's the only way that they're going to save money. So tell us about this onerous board, Ori.
Well, if you go back 4 years to the 2010 election cycle, the former governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, was chastised in the media for saying there was a death panel in Obamacare. And I've said this many times before, Sarah Palin was wrong. There's not a death panel in Obamacare. There are at least two death panels in Obamacare. And the one that Republicans mention when they talk about death panels is the Independent Payment Advisory Board. It's independent of patient control and doctor control. It's dependent only on the government, and it is a true rationing board. It sets prices and decides who will, you know, what care and what care initially Medicare patients can get and not get. The clandestine death panel, if you will, is this U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, because what Obamacare does is Obamacare has a very important section on preventative medicine, And anything that that is deemed preventative medicine is covered at 100% without patient copay or co-insurance. An example of that is contraception and technically abortion as well, because it's a form of contraception. So, and that is defined by the government as preventative care. So anything that is defined as preventative care is going to be covered. Something that's not identified as preventative care is not going to be covered or not going to be covered with the same type of financial consideration. So a number of years ago, this panel decided to make a recommendation that breast cancer screening, mammograms, etc., should only be done between the ages of 50 and 70 and only every 2 years. And this was the recommendation that was being made while all the breast cancer experts and the American Cancer Society were recommending every year starting at age 40.
And let me add that there was not one breast cancer expert on this panel.
Right. I was going to get to the expertise when we talk about their addressing of prostate cancer, the lack of expertise of this panel. But this is a panel of physicians who are appointed without any vetting process to serve on this panel. And sometimes these may be physicians with agendas or just lack of expertise in the area.
Well, so, these doctors
course,
are... These...
All of us know women that have died from breast cancer under age 50, even with screening and even with treatment. It's a terrible disease. And we also know women who've gotten breast cancer over the age of 70. So what this panel basically said, only look for them between the ages of 50 and 70 and write off those women under age 50 that get breast cancer.
Because it wasn't cost-effective.
Let them die. It's not cost-effective.
Cost-effective.
And
right.
So the way I explain this is that morphine is cheaper than chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery.
Right. So when we talk about a war on women that is being waged by one political party, really the people who advocate for Obamacare are really the ones who have. Who have waged a war on women in regard to this breast cancer, in regard to Medicare cutbacks. 56% of all Medicare recipients are women, and they're taking over $700 billion out of Medicare. So the war on women isn't really being waged by one particular party. It's being waged by those who support Obamacare.
Absolutely. And what happened is the breast cancer advocacy group thinks that they have won a victory because the government backed off and has not yet implemented the recommendations of the U.S. Preventative Services.
And that's the key, not yet. Not yet.
Exactly. Well, or has it? Because you have to look a little bit big through a little bit of a bigger picture because the tentacles of all these boards are far-reaching. If you go outside of Obamacare to the stimulus law, to Section 3000 and electronic medical records, even though the government hasn't implemented as far as coverage that recommendation that mammograms only every 2 years and only between the ages of 50 and 70 and write off all the other women, electronic health records prompt physicians to order mammograms only if the patient is between the ages of 50 and 70 and only every 2 years.
Right.
So even though it's not policy, when the physicians are actually going through your electronic health records that President Obama is basically advocating that all physicians use, regardless of whether it provides better care or not, those electronic health records to comply with government regulations only prompt the physicians or the physician extenders to order those screening tests only between the ages of 50 and 70 and only every 3 years.
So let me say this a different way. So they're making it more difficult for physicians to do what they want to do, and they're being herded into a certain treatment pathway. And it hasn't gotten to the point yet where they're not going to pay for it, but that's coming.
Correct.
Now,
correct.
Tell us about. Let's just switch gears and talk about this board and its recommendations on prostate cancer, which is, you know, in my opinion, another war on a major demographic. Who is the which demographic in our society has the largest percentage of prostate cancer?
Well, basically, there's a saying: if a man lives long enough, he will get prostate cancer.
Right.
Okay. The question about prostate cancer is it's difficult to determine which patients die from the disease and which patients die with the disease from
right.
something else.
Right.
And I can tell you that when I went into practice 16 years ago, almost 50,000 men were dying every year from prostate cancer. And with all our screening techniques and surgical techniques and improved radiation techniques and hormonal manipulation techniques, that number today is 28,000.
Wow, so that's almost half.
Half.
What's changed?
Years,
what's changed? What's been the biggest reason, in your opinion, that's changed?
It's early screening, early detection, and education of the public.
And so what's the early screening test? That beside a physical exam, is there a test that is used that allows doctors to screen early prostate cancer patients?
Yes, it's a simple blood test. It's a PSA test, prostate-specific antigen, and it's non-specific, but it can be very sensitive. In other words, it doesn't mean you have cancer if you have an abnormal PSA, but it segregates, it allows us to segregate patients of whom we need to actually biopsy. So as opposed to colon cancer screening where you do a colonoscopy on everybody, it allows us to not do a biopsy on everybody and just do biopsies on those people with abnormal physical examination or abnormal blood
test. So in other words, it's a tool and it requires a doctor who is knowledgeable to decide how to use that information.
Correct. It doesn't mean you have cancer. It means that you need to see a urologist who will need to walk you through the risks and benefits of screening and of treatment if that screening is positive.
So during your lifetime, the PSA has been the test that really is the difference maker, and you know, I think, in my opinion, as a urologist as well, it has if you're looking for cause and effect, and the death rate has decreased so dramatically, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
Exactly, and what's really interesting is in these last 16 years, we really haven't seen an improvement in the actual, a significant improvement in the tools we have for the actual treatment of the disease. We have different surgical techniques, but they have similar results as far as cancer control to the techniques we had in the early 1990s.
Right.
So the radiation is a little more pinpoint, but it's not so much better at treating the cancer. It's better at avoiding complications. So the actual cancer treatment aspect of prostate cancer has really not
right.
improved as far as outcome. The improvement is in education.
And screening.
You have in screening and education of the public, really not by the government, but by physicians
right.
and also by professional sporting organizations that have promoted screening for prostate cancer.
So,
a good thing they've done.
So what did this U.S. Preventive Services Task Force say about PSA screening?
Well, this panel of appointed non-experts, okay, all of whom are physicians, they reviewed the literature, and they determined the PSA is a harmful test, not a good test, that it causes more harm than good, which basically gave it a grade of a D in their scaling, which basically says, do not do this test. The way Obamacare would interpret this recommendation is, do not pay for this test, and do not allow people to get this test. So what happened is that the people that made this decision, these physicians, this panel has no urologist, no radiation oncologist, no oncologist, and the head of the panel is a pediatrician from Baylor College of Medicine in
right.
Houston, Texas.
Well, you know what? We'll wrap this up and then finish the show in the next segment. So you're in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
In 2009, the membership organization Docs for Patient Care was founded. People all around the country wanted to participate in the efforts of this group, and they wanted to join, but they were unable to do so unless they were physicians. It's for this reason that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation was created. Now, everyone can join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. While you're at your computer, please go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org and make a tax-deductible donation and join the fight along with us. Thank you.
This is Denise Simon, 18 hours a day. I live in a world as an intelligence analyst. What I find is reprehensible, what I find is terrifying, what I find is treasonous. The mainstream media has completely failed the American people. So join me for the Denise Simon Experience every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, as we talk about the topics that doctors talk about amongst themselves, such as Medicare, Obamacare, alternative forms of care, and health information technology. Join us every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Donna Fiducia, co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio, and you're listening to America's Web Radio, a most eclectic mix of conservative shows.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with my guest, Ori Hample. Ori, we're going to finish this up real quick because I want to spend like the last 10 minutes that we have in the show about the election. So the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has decided that they're going to ration care for patients who are having elevated PSAs. They're not going to allow people to even look for PSAs. They're not going to pay for PSAs anymore. And so now we've excluded what I think is another demographic that has bought into this myth that Obamacare is good for them. And this is what I was trying to extract from you earlier. Which is the demographic in our society that is most afflicted by prostate cancer?
Well, I don't know if most, but at least the worst afflicted is the African-American population.
That's right.
They get prostate cancer at an earlier age, and the prostate cancer they get tends to be more aggressive and more life-threatening.
Right.
And so basically, but the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and Obamacare, by using it, is basically writing off all black men over 40 and all white men over 50. So they're basically saying, if you're a man and you're aging, forget it. We're not going to spend money to save your life. You're not a good investment of our healthcare dollar. We would rather save money and use it somewhere else.
So two demographics that we've pointed out on this show that have bought into this myth, the women and the African Americans, they're actually harmed in many ways by Obamacare, even though they've been led to believe that this law is helping them. So what I'd like to just do is talk about Obamacare as an election issue. You know, we really try not to be partisan on this show. We can't be partisan because the foundation can't be, and we, you know all about that. But we can talk about it in 30,000-foot terms. You know, this is an issue that everybody believed would be one that would harm the people who had supported this law, and then it kind of died, and nobody's talking about healthcare, and people think that the issue is settled. But can people who voted for Obamacare, Ori, who were responsible for putting this onto the American people, run away from it in 2014?
Across the board, they're running away from it. The only one who's actually publicly not run away from it was basically either the 59th or 60th vote for Obamacare, and that is Mary Landrieu from Louisiana. And she
sort of doubled down, didn't she?
That she would vote for it again.
Right, right. And so you've got to wonder what it is about this after we've pointed out some of the things that we haven't, that are so bad about it. And we haven't even seen some of the bad things. We haven't even had a chance to talk about them today, like the employer mandate that hasn't gone into effect yet, that's going to affect any business in this country with more than 100 employees, or the people who are, now the businesses that are now hiring part-time workers instead of full-time workers. That's gonna happen starting in 2015.
Right, that was delayed. That was delayed to avoid at least one election cycle, and been able to delay it to avoid a second election cycle. And interestingly, in the 2010 election, even though there were issues with the economy, an issue with severe unemployment, and the real cost of living was increasing in a spiraling fashion, the number one issue in the 2010 election was health care.
That's right. So how should, if you were a strategist, how would you recommend to people who are running for the Senate, for example? This bill was passed in the Senate by a majority, by 59 senators. They didn't have a supermajority, if you remember, because Edward Kennedy died and Scott Brown was elected as the senator from Massachusetts at the time, that kept this from being a supermajority, but they got a majority. And now many of those senators are running for re-election this year. So how would you advise people who are running against those same senators to message health care to their advantage?
Well, it's so ridiculously simple that, of course, nobody's doing it. And all a candidate has to do is bring on stage an unfortunate American that has had to use Obamacare and say, look, you know, I got sick and I had to pay $6,000. I can't afford $6,000. Here's my insurance card. I've been paying, you know, whatever per month for my coverage, and I can't get care because I can't afford it. This law was I heard my president tell me that I was going to save the average family, and I was going to save $2,500 a year. It's costing me more. My premiums are higher now than they were before. I lost my insurance. I can't afford the care I need to get.
I lost my doctor. Right? You lost your doctor. You couldn't keep your doctor.
Absolutely. There are so many stories. You don't have to pick. You don't have to find 100 stories. You need to find one patient, one American, one non-politician, even one non-doctor, because even some doctors may come out as being biased on one side of Obamacare or not. You have to bring up a patient. You have to bring up a patient on the stage and say, you see, I got insurance for my 16-year-old child. He got hurt in a football game, and I'm out $6,000. I got the insurance to help protect my family against financial loss. That's what insurance is for. And guess what? I'm in financial loss because I can't afford $6,000 to evaluate and manage my child's injury. Or, here, I have cancer. I lost my cancer doctor because I'm on an Obamacare plan and the panels are extremely restricted.
And the drugs, too.
My doctor quit. My doctor went to concierge medicine. So I had a doctor for 20 years, but because of what's happening in healthcare, my doctor cannot keep the doors open, and I lost my doctor.
So, do you think that there will be a let's just say that there's a change in the Senate, and there is, and the people who are running in the GOP are successful, and they're able to retire Harry Reid, who's kept all of the health care bills that have been passed in the House of Representatives in the circular file and kept them from debate and kept them from the president's desk. Do you think that if there's a change in leadership in the Senate that there'll be any change in Obamacare?
I happen to be somewhat pessimistic. However, it's an essential first step. We know for a fact that if the Republicans do not gain control of the Senate, that we're going to continue with the same thing, that the Republicans in the House are going to send bills over to the Senate to fix certain aspects of the health care system or whatever, and those bills are going to die in the Senate. But if there is a managerial change in the Senate to the Republican side, at least it'll allow Obamacare and the real stories about Obamacare to come out. Because if bills are coming for debate and if bills are being passed and given to the president, he'll probably veto them, but at least it would allow for continued conversation and continued education of the American people of what has been imposed upon them. Remember, we're in a republic. We're in a representative government system, which means that the representatives have to have the interest of the population in mind. And if the population is kept in the dark about what is being imposed upon them or what is coming down the pike right at them like a heat-seeking missile in the next couple of years, it's very important, and it's the obligation of the government to tell the governed what is going to be happening to them or what is already happening to them.
Okay.
And at least if there is a change to the Republicans as far as controlling the Senate, at least the conversation can come out.
Okay.
And if the conversation comes out, it'll allow the American people to really demand appropriate changes.
Well, it'll point out a contrast, which is what we need to have and everybody needs to see. You've got 30 seconds. I'm going to ask you the last question. We are not going to have time for that last question, but I was going to say, what's the one thing that you'd like to see changed in Obamacare beside repealing it? You got 15 seconds. Rapid answer.
You can't do it. It's impossible.
Can't do it.
Way too big. You can't change one thing. You have to get rid of it and employ the free enterprise system to improve quality, cut costs, and increase access.
Market forces.
Absolutely.
Ori, it's been a privilege to chat with you today. I hope that you had as much fun and as good a time as I did talking with you about these issues today.
Thank you, Hal. I do enjoy talking about health care, and I do that with my patients. And my patients ask me, they're asking my advice, you know, what am I going to do? How is this affecting my health and my family?
That's exactly right.
Try to help them.
And that's I think, one of the roles of all the doctors in this country. They need to educate themselves about what's going on and be able to inform their patients about what they can do to protect their health care freedom and the doctor-patient relationship. Ori, thank you for being here in the Doctor's Lounge today on America's Web Radio. And join us next week with our co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik.
This is Donna Fiducia, former anchor at the Fox News Channel and now co-host of Cowboy Logic Radio. And you're listening to America's Web Radio.